Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And he has more than 1,100 pledged delegates. He has more than 1,200 delegates overall. He has a lead in both categories. Ken Rudin, Barack Obama, front runner.
Oh,
I for the Democratic nomination.
You weren't talking about Mike Gravel.
Barack Obama, front-runner for the Democratic National
Convention. Oh, I hate that word.
All right, it's not possible anymore to deny it, so the question is now, can Obama win?
Can he win the nomination?
Can he win the nomination?
Oh, well, sure. All he has to do is win, perhaps, on March 4th. He has to win either Ohio or Texas.
Why do you say either?
First of all, these are supposed to be Hillary Clinton states. I think she has to win both.
She's got the big endorsements. She's got the big unions.
Endorsements.
She's got the demographics. Let's just say that a lot of the advantages that she has in Texas and Ohio are structural. That is to say, they're powerful people, powerful organizations. Aren't the demographics there also really favorable to her?
They are. We saw in California, for example, Hispanics, Latinos went 2-1 for Hillary Clinton. And Texas is the last chance, I think, last gasp for Hispanics to show their political power in the primary season. A lot of P's, a lot of plosives there.
Yes, and if they do, in fact, come out in big, big numbers for Hillary Clinton, that should be dispositive for her, wouldn't it?
Yes, but of course, I don't know if this has anything to do with it or if there's voters will see a connection, but the fact that she dumped her campaign manager this week, who happened to be a Latina, I know in many of the Hispanic blogs out there, which I read all the time, I think that, you know, there's some unhappiness, shall we say, in the Hispanic community, but I don't think that's really changed the magnitude of the support that she has had from these groups.
She is still the known candidate, and they like her position on immigration, or think they do, although there may not be that much difference between her position on immigration and Barack Obama's, but they know more about her, and they don't know that much about Barack.
I think that's that would have been true had we said this 2 months ago when the polls showed her with a huge lead in almost every Super Tuesday state. It seemed like the more opportunities he has gotten to campaign in these states and allow voters to see who he is and what he's like, his numbers have improved. Now, Ohio may be a perfect example. We talk about more blue-collar working-class whites who have been behind Hillary Clinton for most of the primaries. But we did see in this week's Potomac primaries, Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., that these groups also seem to be gravitating towards Obama.
It's interesting to note that since we did the last podcast, just since we did the last podcast last week, Barack Obama has won 6 states plus the District of Columbia and the Virgin Islands, an 8-0 run with Hillary Clinton winning nothing and really not even being close. These are big discouragements for the Clinton campaign, and they have not only lost the campaign manager but also the deputy campaign manager. There's a lot of question about where the money situation is, and there have been some real questions about how she should manage her campaign from now on, whether she should try to improve her ground game or try to buy more television or try to come up with alternative ways to campaign in these states where she ought to do well, as you say.
But, you know, people know who Hillary Clinton is. I don't think there's people who are undecided about her. I think a lot of people have made up their mind. It's almost hard to you know, we always talked about the new Nixon in 1968 as opposed to the old Nixon. I don't know if there's enough time in this primary season for Hillary Clinton to be redefined, recreated almost, because people know who she is.
At the same time, this is perhaps a critical moment and a dangerous moment for Barack Obama because a lot of new scrutiny is going to be directed towards him because he's become the front runner. Now that he's had this big streak and now that he is ahead in delegates, he must be considered in new terms with fresh eyes. And I think a lot of different news organizations and a lot of different voters and individuals are just going to think about him in a new light, and that is going to mean some new scrutiny. For example, in the state that is voting next, Wisconsin, along with Hawaii having a caucus next week, in that state, a lot of questions being asked about where he stood on revitalizing the economy. So we went to Janesville, Wisconsin this week, and he gave a speech in which he tried to differentiate himself from other political figures on the economy. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
As the housing crisis spills over into other parts of the economy, we've seen people's entire life savings wiped out in an instant. It's the result of skyrocketing costs and stagnant wages and disappearing benefits that are pushing more and more Americans towards a debt spiral from which they can't escape. We have to give them a way out by cutting costs, putting more money in their pockets, and rebuilding a safety net that's become badly frayed over the last decade.
That was Barack Obama talking in Janesville, Wisconsin this week. How important is this Wisconsin primary? At this point, we've been talking about Ohio and Texas. What about Wisconsin?
Historically, Wisconsin has been a very crucial state. John Kennedy's victory over Hubert Humphrey in 1960 was big. When Gene McCarthy beat Lyndon Johnson, although Johnson had just dropped out of the race in 68, that was Eugene McCarthy's first victory. So Wisconsin is obviously very important. It's also the demographics are important because we know that in cities like Madison, the white, intellectual, educated, higher income, that has been Obama's good demographic so far. But I'd like to see what the rest of the state, the blue collar workers, which have been Hillary's support for so long, where they go.
Wisconsin's also interesting because it has not only an open primary, but a long tradition of people really taking that seriously. A lot of people are going to cross party lines to vote for John McCain from the Democratic side. A lot of people may come back the other way to vote for one of the Democratic candidates in Wisconsin. This is something that people there do quite routinely, and it is not regarded as mischief, and it's not regarded as people trying to be cute. Full disclosure, I was a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal, and as a former Wisconsinite, I would have to say that I think this has been one of the most critical primaries, not only through the last 40, 50 years that we've been talking about, but also back through the history of the 20th century.
Well, full disclosure, I rooted for the Giants over the Packers in the NFC Championship game.
And I think that means that you will not be allowed in the state of Wisconsin without a Visa and an armed guard.
Exactly. But I don't need a Visa because I do have MasterCard. That's funny. It's very funny.
I think we'll all take a pause and mourn for that last joke. Now, if she should lose Wisconsin, and presumably the Hawaii caucus, this being Barack Obama's birthplace, is she on such a downward spiral that even the next 2 weeks would not be enough to bring her back?
That's a very good question. It reminds me of the Rudy Giuliani strategy, who, for the most part, he not boycotted the early states, but he based his entire campaign strategy on doing well in Florida. But voters, having seen state after state after state, not including Rudy Giuliani, ultimately, when they caught the Florida, said, well, why would we reward somebody now who's not been part of the conversation?
That's right. A lot of people like to be with the hot ticket. But let's also give her her due. She has gone into Texas this week after these disappointments and reversals and really had a full head of steam, really shown some of her best campaigning. Let's listen to a little bit of her in El Paso this week.
And we're going to sweep across Texas in the next 3 weeks, bringing our message about what we need in America, the kind of president that will be required on day one to be commander-in-chief, to turn the economy around. I'm tested. I'm ready. Let's make it happen.
What I'm thinking of, if you look at the headlines, everybody's talking about is Hillary toast? Is she, you know, is she rye bread? Is she is she pumpernickel? Very few people have called her pumpernickel. The point is that when Barack Obama won Iowa, we said, oh, it's over. And then Hillary Clinton was not going to win New Hampshire. And then she won New Hampshire. She said, wait, maybe she's the front runner. And we keep changing our minds. I think we don't know what's going to happen.
It's the flavor of the week. It's the flavor of the week to say Hillary is toast. She's lost all these campaigns. She's lost all these states. She can't recover. She can recover.
Wait, that was William Conrad. That was the best William Conrad impersonation I've ever.
I've been working on my William Conrad.
Yeah,
but look, if she wins Texas and Ohio, if she wins them, particularly if she wins them handily by big margins,
or at all. I don't think she has to win big. I think
except for the delegate payoff. The delegate payoff is very poor if you win 52-48.
That's true.
So she needs more than just a 52% win. She needs more than a bucket at the buzzer. She really needs to kick some butt down in Texas.
Did she need superdelegates?
Let's talk about superdelegates, Ken, because I think you've written a very interesting column that's running on the NPR website, the importance of the
superdelegates. You mean in my political junkie column at NPR.org?
That's, I believe, where I saw it.
Hmm.
Seminal thoughts on the superdelegates.
Let me just talk a little bit about the history of superdelegates. In 1066, William the Refrigerator Perry.
Just go back as far as Sir Walter Mondale.
Exactly. In 1984, when George McGovern, the outsider George McGovern, or Jimmy Carter won the nomination, they said, wait, this is not, we need some adult supervision in the way we pick our nominees. So they have these superdelegates, members of Congress, governors, senators, all that stuff. They will be not bound by their states. Primary or caucus results, they'll vote as just their conscience.
Any way they want.
Right.
But there hasn't been another one as close as 1984 since then.
That's exactly
so
right.
So for 24 years, nobody's really talked that much about them. They were just sort of an add-on footnote type subject.
But until this year.
But now, at least 796 of them, that's excluding Florida and Michigan, are looking like they're going to be the deciders, because neither of these two candidates is likely to have the full 2025 that they need to be nominated on the third night of the convention. So the superdelegates are suddenly critical, and then we look at the number, and people don't agree about how many superdelegates there are, and that's because of Florida and Michigan. What's going to happen with those two states, which are currently out of the picture, not going to be seated at the convention, but everybody expects they will be? What happens?
It's a big fight going on right now, and it's become almost a civil rights issue if you listen to Julian Bond, Al Sharpton. But the whole story is, not to regurgitate this story, but both states were told that if you move up your primaries to January, you'll be penalized, you'll be sanctioned, you'll lose your delegates. They did it anyway. They had their primaries. Nobody campaigned. It just so happens Hillary Clinton won both. But anyway, no delegates were given out. Now, the argument is for some people, well, how could you not seat the delegates of Michigan and Florida? They're two crucial states. You don't want to anger anybody. Convention.
So you agree the delegates will be there and will
no
be
question,
seated.
No question.
The only question is how will they vote?
Exactly.
I think we can say that if Barack Obama wins the next couple of primaries in February and then wins in Ohio and Texas on March 4th, he's going to be able to afford to be quite magnanimous, because then he's really going to be in the driver's seat and he can afford to let Florida and Michigan come in with their current ratio. But what about the Republicans, Ken? What about Fred Thompson?
You know, that's funny you say that. Nobody's talking about Fred Thompson anymore.
It's amazing. I mean, when you consider how much extraordinary momentum the man has brought into this campaign and how well known he was and television star and so forth. I mean, I haven't heard anything about him lately.
We've doubled our listenership, the podcast has, from 1 to 2. Is that double? Because of Fred Thompson, and yet nobody, I get no male, or even no women talking about Fred Thompson.
Well, what about the Republicans? We had John McCain in the Potomac primary, winning all three, getting a sweep of the delegates from Virginia and D.C. and virtually the same from Maryland. A great day for him, really installed him permanently as the front runner.
There was an asterisk.
Tell us about that.
The asterisk to me was Virginia, in the sense that, one, in there's no party registration of Virginia. I suspect a lot of independents went to vote for Barack Obama instead of John McCain. And the conservative opposition, the evangelical/conservative opposition to John McCain, while it's not a majority of the party, it's still significant enough, I think, to give him some pause as he's trying to wrap up the nomination. It's almost hard to see him celebrating the nomination as opposed to just saying, whew, you know, that was a relief.
One thing that is different now after the Potomac primary and after that sweep for McCain, that even though he may have to struggle on a little bit and deal with Mike Huckabee for another few weeks, probably dismissing him on March 4th in Ohio and Texas, he now feels he has license to go after the Democrats and even not just Hillary Clinton, as you say, the figure that the Republicans had preferred to think of as their punching bag, but now for the first time directly after Barack Obama. Let's listen to what he said after the Potomac primaries.
Hope is a powerful thing. I can attest to that better than many, for I've seen men's hopes tested in hard and cruel ways that few will ever experience. And I stood astonished at the resilience of their hope in the darkest hours, because it didn't reside in an exaggerated belief in their individual strength, but in the support of their comrades and their faith in our country. To encourage a country with only rhetoric rather than sound and proven ideas, the trust and the strength and courage of free people is not a promise of hope, it's a platitude.
That's John McCain talking after the Potomac primary, and just to be clear, hope in this case, in this context, is Barack Obama.
That's true, Ron, but I suspect that that Bing Crosby is John McCain.
I see.
One thing that struck me also about the night of the Potomac primaries is when we saw Barack Obama speaking in Wisconsin, there were like 17,000 people screaming, excited, you know, animated. And when they cut to, he was followed by John McCain in Virginia, surrounded by John Warner and Tom Davis and people who just did a lot of
politically deceased.
Yeah,
no, but seriously, they're all retiring.
Yeah, a lot of they didn't have the emotion. So again, it would have been one thing for the Republican Party to rally against Hillary Clinton. I think it's a tougher road to go against somebody like Barack Obama. I'm not sure they know how to do it.
A tougher road.
Yes,
we're on the road with Hope and McCain
and Ken
Crosby
and Ken and Ron.
We're on the road to November. We're on the road to the end of this particular podcast. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Bing Crosby.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
We're off on the road to Morocco. This taxi is tough on the spine.
Beats the bus, huh, Junior?
Beats me.
Where we're going,
why we're going, how can we be sure?